This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Smoking big, rolling solo. It's hell on earth, and the city's on fire. In hell, there's heaven. There's a bull and a matador dueling in the sky. In hell, there's heaven.
A period of intense self-quarantine. Today, we are going to talk about whatever there is to talk about in the baseball Mariner universe. If you didn't know, somehow, things have stopped. There is nothing going on. The coronavirus has shut down all of sports, but it has not come for podcasting yet. So we are here to help guide you through what is one of the weirdest periods of American life I can remember. So today, we are going to do that with the newest hire at Lookout Landing, who is also a writer for Pitcher List, a podcast veteran, and a Bellingham native. It is the one and only Michael Ejeto. What's up, Mikey?
Nothing much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I ran the numbers here, and we hired you, and then 2 weeks later, a global pandemic broke out. What the fuck is going on there?
I mean, it doesn't speak well to, you know, I saw some commenters on my first piece were like, this doesn't seem good. Like, you're hired and now coronavirus. So, I swear I'm not to blame, but, you know, the correlation doesn't look amazing.
Exactly. And we have a lot of conspiracy theorists amongst us, definitely in the comment section. So I'm not surprised at all that that was, their knee-jerk reaction was to immediately assume that. But, yeah, I'm doing fine. Like, it's been weird. Obviously, I live in Seattle proper, so it's been pretty mellow. There's nothing happening anymore. But, like, life has to continue, you know? That's the weirdest part. Right. Like, you still see people in the streets and driving around, and it's like, you can't just all not do anything. But the worst is the grocery store. I feel really bad for everyone.
It's awful.
Who works there. And, like, I know that no one comes here for advice on how to live their life during a pandemic, but the one thing that I will say is it doesn't seem like you need to buy the whole grocery store. You can just buy a normal amount and then come back later when they restock and buy a normal amount again. Because when you buy everything, you leave nothing for the people who, like, truly need it. So that's my only soapbox thing that I'll say about the coronavirus, which I'm not an expert on by any stretch of the imagination. How's life in Bellingham?
It's weird. It feels like in some ways, things haven't changed, especially for me, like the work that I do outside of, you know, baseball stuff, which is just kind of what I call it, like hashtag baseball stuff. Like my ex-girlfriend used to be like, hey, like, what are you doing tonight? And I'll be like, like I'm super slammed with school stuff and I also got baseball stuff. And she'd be like, okay. But like the work that I do, you know, like to insurances, we have to argue that it's like clinically significant. And so that doesn't just stop, you know, when there's a pandemic. If anything, it might be more important now because schools are shut down. And so like, I'm pretty at risk for, you know, being exposed. We're doing our best to, you know, be as clean as possible. But yeah, it's been a trip.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel real yet to me, which I know is probably part of the problem. Like, I think a lot of people feel that way, and that's why they're continuing to just live their life. But there are some benefits used as a loose term here, obviously. Like, none of this is good, but, like, everyone being a lot cleaner seems like a net positive for America. Hopefully that can continue to some extent afterwards. I saw some people on Twitter being like, I started flossing just out of pure boredom. Like, this might actually bleed into my real life afterwards and things like that. So, I mean, all I can really do, and, like, I think people who listen to this kind of know this about me, like, I'm just kind of rolling with the punches and, like, trying my best to laugh at anything that's a little bit funny. There's some serious parts to this for sure that I don't want to take lightly, but like there's nothing that I can do besides washing my hands and avoiding people. So I'll do that and then continue to get these jokes off, I think.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
Have you taken up any new hobbies or anything? What have you been doing to pass the time?
Man, like, last weekend, I just wanted, like, it's kind of a want what you can't have kind of thing. So I just so badly wanted to, like, go out and get a beer or, like, see my friends. And honestly, it's been, like, kind of crappy. And I have been, like, I don't really know, like, sick. Like, I got some pretty bad allergies on Sunday, like, the Sunday before this past Sunday. And then that kind of led into, I think, what was a sickness. Like, I had a, just a sore throat, basically. And then that finally led up this morning. So today's been great. Like, I literally didn't step outside the entire weekend. So doing that this morning was fantastic. And then, like, my first piece came out, and I got to see people, and just, like, see clients that I really love. So it's been a good day, but the weekend was kind of rough, because I was, like, sick and just quarantining myself. But, yeah, I've been intending on doing some more reading, watching more, like, movies and shows and stuff. I would have loved to have done it with my brother, but he went back down to our hometown in Auburn because he doesn't have much reason to be up here, and he's poor. So, yeah, I think mostly for me it'll be, I think more, I've been doing some, like, live streams with the Turn 2 podcast, Matt Williams, and we've been doing that to kind of just get people's minds off of, you know, all of the crappiness that's happening right now. And then honestly, like, I already do what I am going to be doing, kind of. Like, it's gonna, I'm in an online program, so unfortunately, like, I would love some more time off, even though my spring break was I think last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I don't know. But yeah, so it'll still be a lot of writing, a lot of just, like, baseball stuff, and then, just school, unfortunately, and then just work. So I'm already busy, and I will continue to be super busy, but I'm trying to use it as an excuse to, like, not feel such a need to be so productive, because I have, like, I'm super, obsessive about my productivity, because I have, like, clinical OCD. And so hopefully it's just like this weekend I didn't feel too bad about it. 'Cause I was like, oh, well, like, there's a reason why I have to, you know, do this. It still didn't feel amazing, but, it's nice to just do nothing every once in a while. Unfortunately, it'll probably be a lot of, that for the foreseeable future. I don't know.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know. For me, that is, like, kind of my favorite thing in the whole world, is just to do nothing. Like, when people ask what my hobbies are, I mean, I have to, similar to you, I'm like, well, there's the baseball stuff, which also, like, there's such a specific humiliation to asking your roommate to be quiet so you can record a podcast. Like, it's such a weird thing to ask another adult. Like, and when I've had a couple people do this, like, in person, like, they'll come over to my apartment and we'll just sit at my kitchen counter and talk, and I have to be like, hey, can you leave? Like, can you hide in your room while I talk to this person about, like, Yusei Kikuchi or whatever? And they're like,
right.
I guess. It's a very weird life to live, but I'm glad that you have the shorthand baseball stuff. I might just steal that for myself.
Yeah, I think it's nice, yeah. Because no one cares.
Exactly. They don't care, like, oh. And the more you explain it, the more it kind of makes it worse, I've noticed.
Right.
Like, if you just say, oh yeah, I host a podcast, there's still, like, kind of a veneer of coolness there. When you get into, like, the nitty-gritty, they're like, oh, this guy's insane.
They're like, I don't want to go in my room anymore. I want to ruin your baseball stuff.
Or, like, I want to sit here and watch how weird this is going to be and, like, laugh at you. Like, bad stand-up sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
But I don't even remember where I was going with that anymore. Oh, yeah. Like, I had the realization, because my roommate left. He's from Idaho, and he just went home. So, like, okay, I have this whole apartment to myself for probably a while. Like, what am I going to do? And then I realized that, like, the things I was already doing indoors aren't going to change, right? It's only the stuff that you were doing in the outside world that you have to give up. But, like, I wasn't, like, I've seen a lot of people thinking about, like, yeah, I'm going to take up a new skill or, like, do this, do that. And it's, like, you think you're going to do that, but you're just going to go way harder on the things you were already doing. So, like,
right.
If you were already reading a book, you're probably going to finish that book. But, like, it's, I don't feel like I'm going to learn how to, like, speak a new language or, like, learn how to bake or anything like that. Like, I'm just going to play way more NCAA football on my Xbox.
Right. I so badly want a PS4 to play the show. Like, I have an Xbox One, but I'm in this weird space where, like, I don't want to wait that year where it's, like, cross-platform or whatever. But I don't want to buy a PS4. I might just do it, though. Like, it's tax season. I don't know. And PS4 is better anyways. So, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to hit up Craigslist or eBay or something.
Yeah, that's the move. There's so much potential here for the video game world to really, like, as gross as it sounds, to really capitalize right. on like a global esports? Pandemic.
Yeah. Like, this is esports chance. Like, more than ever.
Yeah, esports, like Slack and Zoom and Skype, all of the virtual communication platforms, like, I would buy stock in those, you know? Like, there's a lot of opportunities here for the world to kind of flip on its axis, and, like, the money is going to be very wild in a certain section of America. Like, there's going to be a lot of boom, and then some people are going to lose their jobs, unfortunately, which is, I think, right. the biggest bummer of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's enough commiserating, or whatever that was that we were doing. I do want to talk about a very unfortunately timed, I guess, piece that you wrote. You made your debut on the site this week, writing about Justice Sheffield, who, of course, we probably aren't going to see for a very long time. But obviously, to all the listeners, please go read Mikey's piece called Justice Sheffield is Leaning Into It. Did I get that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I wanted to make sure I didn't paraphrase. But yeah, read that and delve into all of the changes Justice is making. But Mikey, I wanted to talk to you about it specifically as the person mm-hmm. who wrote it. My first question is just, why Justice Sheffield? What about him? Like, obviously the piece kind of explains the things you're looking at, but what originally led you to say, I want to write about Justice Sheffield on such an in-depth level?
Well, I think I've just been, ever since he came over, like, when he came over, I was kind of a Sheffield apologist, and I was like, you know, I think there is, I wrote about it at, like, my blog before I was even at PitcherList, but I was like, hey, I think there's a perception problem with the market right now, and I think this is the best that we could do. So, like, yeah, we traded James Paxton, who's amazing, when he's, you know, on the mound. But I think, you know, with the pieces that we got, I was pretty excited, and I was like, okay, I think he has a really strong chance of, being, you know, being like a number two or three, starter. And I think the other pieces are really good too. And at the time, like, Jeff Sullivan was saying Eric Swanson might be better than Justice Sheffield. and he thought Justice Sheffield was good. And then the more that I learned about him, I would just, you know, be looking. And I think I'm kind of starting a project on it now over at PitcherList. But I think that we don't really look at spin rate completely, like, correctly all the time. Because I think total spin rate is important. But active spin rate contextualizes your total spin rate. And so I'm kind of trying to see if I can create a more predictive and descriptive metric. I'm not a very good, like, data guy, but I can kind of come up with ideas and work with our data team to do that. But basically, like, Justice Sheffield has a bad fastball, and that's because he has decent velo, but he has a awful spin rate. He ranks in the 5th percentile in spin rate. And it gets worse. He ranks in the 5th percentile of active spin rate at 64.1%. So, active spin rate, and I might butcher this, like, I understand what it is in my head, but it's kind of difficult to explain. basically, for fastballs, like, 100, if you have a 100% spin rate, that means that all of the movement, all of the spin, I should say, all of the spin that you're creating is going towards the movement, and it's going towards backspin. So if you think about, like, Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, they have nearly 100% backspin. And so when you look at Justin Sheffield, he has, you know, like almost half. He has 64% essentially backspin on his fastball. And so 64% of his spin is contributing to the movement of his fastball. And so it's kind of like a Garrett Richards thing where it's like, whoa, like, well, I guess with Richards, it's like, whoa, this guy has a, like, really good spin. And then you look and you're like, oh, but it's all like inactive spin. And then there's Justice Sheffield where it's like, man, this guy's spin sucks and his active spin sucks too. So he has really what all that means is he doesn't have a spin or he doesn't have a fastball with rise like Verlander or Cole or like Caleb Smith. He has one with sink like Garrett Richards. And what that means is it's a really heavy bowling ball fastball that gets a lot of sink and isn't going to get whiffs. And so it's already a ground ball pitch. And I think, you know, theoretically, I say in the piece, like, he could try and, you know, fix his, try and get on top of the ball more and try to shift, the access to create more, active spin, but it's just so bad that I'm not sure it's worth it. I think he should look into it, but I think for right now, it makes much more sense to, like I said, lean into it, and just switch pitch grips and throw a sinker where it sinks more, and creates more ground balls. And I think, you know, that's good because it's going to create more weak contact. Like he's in kind of a purgatory where, his fastball doesn't get enough, like it doesn't get enough, like it gets too much sink and it doesn't get enough arm side movement. And then compared to a sinker, like it doesn't get enough sink or arm side movement. And so I think it's a judicious change to switch to the sinker. So it's going to get, I think, more ground balls, create weaker contact. The downside is it might get put into play more, but I like kind of doubt it. I am excited that he is going to be elevating his fastball more. Even though his four-seam fastball, that is, even though it's a pitch that, you know, gets sink. But he's had some marginal success elevating it. And so I just think all of this, I think it raises his floor, especially because he might be able to command the sinker better. And I also think that it gives him a greater, basically, like, ability to just do different things. Like, okay, I can pitch my sinker low in the zone, arm side and glove side. I can go glove side with the slider and arm side with the changeup. And then I can elevate my four-seam fastball. So it's a pretty simple change, but I think it's done a lot for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we saw this a little bit in the spring training game against the Giants, right? Like, that was when we actually saw the changes happen and kind of how it would play against hitters. So what did you see? I know we didn't see a lot of Justice in spring training, but besides just, oh, he's throwing a sinker now, what else stood out to you in the little bit that we saw in Arizona?
I felt like, and I didn't, like, I don't have access to any heat maps, but it really looked like he did a much better job at keeping the ball at the bottom of the zone. And I think that's something that he should have been doing all along, probably, as you know, so long as he wasn't elevating his fastball, which he wasn't, because he pitched to the middle of the plate a lot with his four seam fastball. And like I say in the article, like, it's not a huge departure from what he's been doing, but I think the execution was a little better. And I do think that, like, there was a lot less going to the middle of the plate and just being so hittable. And what I was really impressed by was that, like, he was using it to set himself up, and it, you know, it wasn't perfect. Like, there were a couple hard hit balls, and I think one or two of those might have been on the sinker and one was on the changeup, which is still developing. But it's impressive that, like, he didn't bring the four seamer out at all. And I think that was kind of to get a lot of reps with his sinker. But yeah, just a lot of sinkers down in the zone, which is, I really think he should be peppering the bottom of the zone with his sinker and, you know, burying his slider, and throwing his changeup away. And it was just, it was really awesome to see that, like, in 0-2 counts, he wasn't, like, he wasn't going to that sinker, like, and he wasn't going to a fastball, which he should never, ever, ever do. I liked seeing that towards the end of the year, he started going away from his fastball more, and he started incorporating his secondaries more. But, like, you know, it'd be an 0-2 count, and he'd be like, okay, I'm going to bury a slider, and if that doesn't work, I'll bury another one, or I will, you know, throw a changeup off the plate. But, yeah, I still think that his command isn't solved. I don't think he's still not perfect by any means there, but I think he might be able, honestly, to he might be able to command his secondary pitches better than, like, his fastball at this point. I've just seen him so many times miss with his fastball. And so, yeah, I was encouraged, but, you know, it wasn't a huge sample. So, yeah, it would have been nice to see a couple more games out of him. But for now, we've just we've got that Giants game.
Yeah, we'll always have that Giants game. No matter what happens with the mighty Corona, we'll all remember the time that Justice Sheffield looked okay in spring training against the Giants.
He threw a sinker. Threw a freaking sinker. Yeah.
It'll be our version of, like, a war story, you know, when people were talking about, like, the past times during World War II. Like, ah, we had just the great Justice Sheffield game. I feel like, me personally, the way that my brain works, like, whenever the Mariners have a young player with any sort of prospect pedigree, like any sort of mention on top 100 lists, or they used to be, you know, a high draft pick, or they had a good year at this level, whatever, I usually get pretty excited just because I want to, you know. For me, it's more fun to believe in them than to be so pessimistic, which I also totally understand just given the kind of everything that's ever happened to this franchise. But right. So, like, when Justice Sheffield came over, I was bummed because I just liked James Paxton a lot, even though it made sense to get rid of him. But the thing that I kept hearing was his absolute ceiling is back end of the rotation or has to become a reliever. So I wanted to ask you, as someone who has a little more of an analytical approach, like, what do you think it would take for him? What is, like, what does he have to do on the mound to separate himself from, I'm going to be a reliever, to, okay, I can stick in their rotation? Like, what does that look like if he's his best self pitching, like, in the second or third slot in a big league staff?
Mm-hmm. So right now, I would say, you know, before this game, he really had one pitch that was good, and his, you know, his slider is, like, really, really good. Like, it's one of the best pitches. It's one of the best sliders in the league. But it's not ideal to be a three-pitch pitcher with two that aren't very good at all and also command that's, like, 40 grade, 45 grade. And so I think right now he's got a really good chance. Like, I don't think he's necessarily going to be a back-end pitcher. I mean, he has a chance still to be a number three pitcher, I would say. Like I said in the piece, I think what's going to limit him is that he's putting a lot of his eggs into the basket of basically BABIP, because his changeup, like, changeups just in general and splitters, they get put into play a lot. And so over at Pitcherless, we've developed a stat which is really simple, just called strikes plus whiff, or whiffs, CSW. And changeups and splitters always have really low CSWs because, one, they don't get thrown in the zone very much, and two, they get put into play a lot. And so two of his pitches are pitches that get put into play a lot. And so I think that's always going to hold him back, and it's going to hold him back from being someone who is more of a 30% strikeout percentage guy. and so I think he's going to need to have some success with the four-seam fastball to be, you know, more towards that number three starter. And then I think he absolutely needs to take a step forward with his command because, like I said, he's just, like, it doesn't matter as much with the slider and the changeup because you're throwing them off the plate anyhow. And they're just such, at least the slider is such a good pitch. And I actually like the changeup a lot more than I did last year. But I think he absolutely needs to just be able to command his pitches better because, it's just critical for him. Like if he gets behind in the count, I don't think he's someone that is going to continue to throw a slider, which is easily his best pitch. And so I think it's sort of a cop-out, but just the continued development of his changeup and fastballs and then his command, I would say.
Yeah, so basically to be a good pitcher, he just has to become a good pitcher.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of hopeful about him after this. Like, I think the issue for him is he going to be able to get into pitcher's counts, which, you know, is an issue for a lot of pitchers. And so he's going to have to be kind of reliant on, you know, putting the ball on the ground. And if he does, you know, like wiggle his way into working into, you know, 0-2, 1-2, 2-2 counts, he's going to be able to get strikeouts because his slider's so good. It has like a 24% swinging strike percentage, which is just bananas. So I don't know, like, yeah, it sounds really bad, and maybe the pendulum has just swung too far the other way and I'm just too optimistic about him, especially with like the recency bias, which is with his new pitches, but, or I guess pitch really. So I don't know. Yeah, the sinker's always going to hold him back, but I do think, like I say in the piece, like I think that he can kind of resemble something like Patrick Corbin and Dylan Bundy. And like Patrick Corbin's really good and Dylan Bundy's not so good, but I think Dylan Bundy's going to be good in 2020. And I think they're actually going to be really similar pitchers. I just think I think Justice might be a poor man's Dylan Bundy.
Oh boy.
Yeah, because of his command. But I think it's better than... I just think Dylan Bundy's going to be good this year, which is like a weird thing to say. But I'm just really optimistic about him.
Sure. Okay, then. So I guess one question that I kind of formulated while you were explaining all of this, and that I'm genuinely curious about, and I'm sure people who don't, like, who are being introduced to you for the first time or maybe aren't too familiar with your stuff would know, is like, what kind of things do you value the most when you're evaluating a pitcher? So like, if there's, let's say there's a minor league guy that you've never heard of, but all of his numbers are available, what would be the first things that you look to try to figure out if this guy will be good, where there's room for improvement, all of that? Like, what are the ones that pop out to you when you're looking at just the raw numbers or the advanced numbers for that matter?
One is, I don't want to see a pitcher who, and this is going to sound weird. I don't want to see a pitcher who is just like limiting super, super weak contact, because we know that that's not, unless you have, I think there's two ways to circumvent this, but unless you have really good command and a deep, repertoire, or both, like Hyunjin Ryu has a really deep repertoire and he has really good command. Marco has a good command and a deep repertoire. Kyle Hendricks, people like that, they're able to outperform their peripherals, and like their strikeout rates will be higher than you'd expect because they don't miss their spots as much, and they just have more unpredictability of just being, and like more pitchability by being more unpredictable. And so I'm not really looking for contact suppression. Like, I want to see something in terms of sustainability, like something around league average. And so I've really learned this from Alex Chamberlain over at FanGraphs, and I've talked to him a good amount about it and references work quite a bit. But, yeah, I'm looking at, like ex-WOBA and WOBA and looking at the pitch type level to see if, like, where is this performance coming from? Is it coming from his changeup, which has a 145 BABIP, or, and I'm just making these numbers up right now, but like, is it coming from a changeup with a super low BABIP and super low ex-WOBA and super low And I actually mean ex-Wobacon and Wobacon, because Woba and ex-Woba at the pitch type level and even just at the gross level are kind of, they can be misleading because of this contact suppression stuff. And so that's one thing I'm looking for. And then on the flip side, I'm looking to see, like, do these pitchers have swing and miss stuff? So, like, grossly, like, do they have, like, a 15% swing and strike rate? Because that's really good. And then at the pitch type level, like, where's this coming from? Is it coming from, again, like, is it coming from their slider? With Justice Sheffield, that's where it's coming from. With his changeup, he gets some whiffs, too. With his fastball, he gets, like, none. And so I want to see, like, if they have the ability to miss bats, if they have the ability to get chases. So on, like, Baseball Savant, that's chase percentage. On FanGraphs, that's O-swing percentage. And then also... I want to see if they're throwing in the zone, but if they're getting whiffs or if they're getting chases out of the zone, that doesn't matter as much. And so I'm looking at things like that. There's just, like, for me, it's just such a deep, deep, like, process, because I wrote an article about it actually at Pitcherlist, and it's called Fantasy 101, How to Evaluate Pitchers Using Multiple Statistics, and it's over at Pitcherlist. But, like, my process generally starts the same. I generally look at, like, the pitch type statistics on FanGraphs, and then, you know, just, like, their FIP, and, like, I'm getting really, like, just really surface-level stuff. And then I dive deeper into, like, you know, the ex-Wobacon and Wobacon and swinging strike percentage stuff. But I think the main thing is just, like, can this guy miss bats? Like, obviously. Because we know that it's the most sticky skill that there is. And so, like, that's why pitchers like Kyle Hendricks, like, he's really good. But there's not that many pitchers that can do what he does. It's really crazy. Like, his peripherals always say, you know, like, he's not going to be that great, but then he puts up like a 3.3 ERA, and so I think it's just it's in bad faith to pitchers like Miles Mikolas and Mike Foltynewicz and Kyle Freeland. They trick us every year because we're like, man, this guy was really good and he limited contact, and it's like, yeah, he did, but he probably won't do it next year. I think that we should always think that a guy won't until he does. And so, yeah, I guess this was really long-winded, but that's kind of generally what I do, I guess.
No, that was great. I mean, we're trying to encapsulate your brain, your thought process, give people a peek into what they're going to be getting from your content. So that was wonderful. That was like kind of a thesis statement on you, which is good. I don't have anything nearly that elaborate. If I were to describe the way I approach baseball, it wouldn't be nearly as smart sounding.
I'm sure it would.
No, enough of the nerd shit, though. I want to know, just eye test, who are your favorite pitchers to watch? So, like, for me, I have some pitchers who I know, if I look at their numbers, are not very good, but I love them either way. Like, Touki Toussaint is the first that comes to mind when I think of that. Like, I know he's had a lot of struggles, but his stuff is just so fun to look at. I mean, Fernando Rodney was also that. Like, knowing that you're going to get one of two pitches and it's either going to be, like, 97 and who knows where it goes, or you're going to look dumb on this changeup, or it's going to end up in the seats. Like, there's pitchers like that where they make you really feel stuff are my favorite. So, like, Jose Fernandez was probably my favorite ever. RIP to him, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, Stroman, Noah Syndergaard, Tim Lincecum, all those guys mean a lot to me. So I want to know for you, because I'm sure the numbers have sort of seeped in unconsciously, who are your favorites to just watch when you're sitting on your couch enjoying some baseball?
So in terms of Mariners and former Mariners, like, obviously Felix was always just someone that I loved watching. When I was younger, I think Freddy Garcia and Jamie Moyer were people that I really loved watching. Arthur Rhodes. Yeah, man. I think I have some weird bias towards, like, pitchability and just, like, being a crafty pitcher, which is, you know, like, watching Jamie Moyer throw like 82 mile per hour fastballs is one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. And he was a super serviceable pitcher. Like, is he's in the Mariners Hall of Fame. Yeah.
I would imagine so. Yeah. I think the criteria for that is just 5 years with the team. So I would have to imagine he's in there.
So those are like my kind of more old school guys. More recently, like, this might sound weird, but I loved watching Mike Leake pitch. Especially I was shitting my pants when he almost threw a no hitter. Like, I said this in the Slack, but I was on my way to a bonfire and we were about to get out of the car and head down. And I was with my ex-girlfriend. I was like, yo, like, we can't get out of the car. And she's like, what? And I was like, this guy's pitching a no hitter. Like, we gotta wait. And she was like, well, okay. And I don't even think that it was on the radio. I think I had to pull up my phone and maybe even like find a stream or go on like TuneIn or something. So I'm listening to this no hitter. And of course he loses it in like the ninth inning. But I love watching Mike Leake. That would be way different. I love watching him pitch for some reason. And so Marco is another guy that I really like to pitch for that reason. And I also just think, like, if his velo ever comes back, he's going to be really good. So those are probably my main Mariners guys. I'm trying to think. I am excited about, you know, basically our whole staff, except really Kendall Graveman. Like, I am excited about him in the way that you can be excited about, like, Mike Leake, especially if his velo comes back too. In terms of other teams, I think, especially because I've written about them and have just, like, I had to pull a lot of video and watch them pitch, but, like, Andrew Heaney, I love Andrew Heaney. I'm a Andrew Heaney apologist. Matt Boyd, I love Matt Boyd, and I actually think of the two pretty similarly. I think Matt Boyd has a higher ceiling because of the breadth of his repertoire. Shane Bieber is someone who I'm kind of going against my own beliefs in a way as it pertains to what I think about limiting soft contact, or really limiting limiting hard contact and like the sustainability of that, because he has a bad fastball, sort of, because he doesn't elevate it, and it gets beat up. And halfway through the season, like in June, he just started doing way better, and people are like, oh, this is just like, this is unsustainable. Like, this can't possibly keep up. And I was like, no, I think this is happening because over the course of the entire season, that was kind of like on June 15th was like the threshold for when his curveball just became more of like a spike curveball, kind of like, that's, I'm going to write about it, but that's kind of why I'm excited about Taijuan Walker. And it used to have like a little hump that would come out, like it would pop out of the pitch tunnel, in the way that I think Yusei Kikuchi's did too. And so it stopped doing that, and his fastball started playing a lot better. So I do think there's going to be regression, but I love watching that guy pitch because he has super good command. He has a super filthy knuckle curve and slider, and just watching him spot his fastball is like art. So I think Shane Bieber is like the number one guy for me. Really every guy that I write about, like, I like watching them pitch. One, because they're generally like pitchers that I think have potential, but also because I'm biased after watching them and like investing in them, I guess. And then I think the last is, I wrote about him too, but Tyler Rogers throws an 83 mile per hour sinker and a 73 mile per hour slider. And he has the lowest release point in the MLB since, well, I think ever in the pitch tracking era. So since 2008, I think, lower than Chad Bradford. So he's obviously fun to watch.
Huh. Well, there you go. Another very thorough answer. I have to admit, when you brought up the Mike Leake perfect game, I started to tune out because I was finding my recap that I wrote for that game. This was a classic case of what we call the baseball gods smiling on me, because it was a Friday night. I'm retracing this all, and I, you know, fell on the sword, said, I'll recap the game, guys. Everyone go have fun. It's the middle of the summer. Like, it's July 19th, 2019. Lots of things to do in Seattle on a Friday night in July. And I'm reading it again. There's a lot of things that I forgot. The scoreboard went out. I completely forgot about that part of the game. So there was no noise in the stadium, which I wrote, like, obviously feels very Mike Leake to have that all happen. Like, the most chill environment possible. I called him the indica of pitchers. I don't remember writing that at all. And then there's also, there's a screenshot of Domingo Santana is going for a fly ball and he straight loses it. So he's doing the like palms up thing and then he finds it and he catches it. But it's like,
good God.
The screenshot is hilarious. It's like 10-0 Mariners, top seven. And then you just see Domingo Santana trying his best to work against that. Luckily he did catch that ball, but I also was apparently doing laundry during this game and I wrote about that. So it was a very transformative experience to hear you talk about the Mike Leake game and for me to go back and kind of find my own thoughts on it. So thank you for that.
I'm going to read this. Yeah. I mean, like, send me this after this, because obviously I'm not going to read it right now,
right.
But I do want to read it later.
Man, the Mariners also, so Malik Smith got hurt during the game, apparently, and their outfield at one point, mind you, during a perfect game, the outfield was Dylan Moore, Chris Negron, and Domingo Santana.
I mean, that's kind of like how it has to work, right?
Well, yeah, this is all like a very Mike Leake, very Mariners game, and they also kicked ass, which I forgot about. Like, it was 10-0 in the seventh. I don't know what the final score was, but... like, what a night. And that is, like, that's the dream when you sign up for the Friday or Saturday recap. You're like, I know I could be doing other things. This is your hashtag baseball stuff getting in the way. And then to get a game like that rather than just, like, for me, the worst is, like, 7-1. You know, like, if they're going to lose, I want it to be bad enough that I can, like, kind of be funny. Like, don't just lose, like, you know, don't be down 4-0 in the sixth and then lose 7-1. Like, that's just such a boring game to me.
Yeah.
So... yeah, if anyone wants to Google it, Mike Leake throws 8/9 of a perfect game. Mariners win 10-0. Okay, that's the headline.
Oh, amazing. I'm so excited.
Okay, so we got like 20 more minutes here. I suppose I should ask you to zoom out a little bit, not just from Justice Sheffield or even just pitchers. And in the abbreviated amount of spring training that we saw, what excited you? Like, what are you looking for in spring training in the first place? And what did you see that kind of... got you to perk up a little bit from the little bit that we saw of the actual Mariners playing baseball?
So I think over time I've just realized that I like hitters and I like writing about hitters and analyzing hitters and everything, but I definitely side more to the side. Jesus. I definitely am just more partial to like watching pitchers. And so that's what I was more excited about, especially because I think that Taiwan and Kikuchi and Sheffield are making such cool changes. And then, like, our bullpen sucks, but they're, like, so fun because they're just the most bullpen spaghetti bullpen ever.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of excited to just see how that all worked out, because I actually do like a couple of our relievers. In general, like, I don't think I have any crazy answers. I was kind of intrigued by Marmolejos just because I think he can be probably something like a league average bat and also play some defense. Like some workable defense in the corner, and like play DH and first base. I like, we had Domingo Santana in the outfield before that, so like, could he be worse? Probably not. And then Tim Lopes, like, it's hard not to just be rooting for him. You know, I don't think there was like a ton that I saw that I was like, oh man, like, this is super cool. Which sucks, but, you know, I think for the most part, it was really just like seeing how the kids were playing. Like, I actually hate that I just said that, because I hate when people say, I can't think of any terms. I think that's the one that upsets me, when people call other players, like kids, like, oh, this kid's gonna be great. And it's like, yo, this guy's like 27 and you're 21. Like, oh, why?
I totally do that. I'm very guilty of it.
Then I guess I hate you. That's fine. But I just did it too. So
join the club. I'm sure, yeah. I've pissed off so many other people by doing way more harmless things. So I can take that.
Right. It's pretty benign, so it's whatever. But I don't know. I think really just like watching Kyle Lewis and Evan White and Jake Fraley and Malik's, really just anyone under like 29 and has a meaningful future, which I think we have a lot of those. So it's really just cool to see. Obviously, like, this isn't going to be a great year, especially with, you know, the coronavirus stuff. But we just have like a lot of intriguing young guys, and I think it's going to be ugly, but I think it's going to be a growing year. And so, yeah, like, you add JP Crawford and Shed Long. And I think the biggest, like, the most impressed I've been by someone is Jared Kelnick, just because of how, like, he already looks like he could play. Like, if we were in a tight spot and contending, I think there's a chance that he could have started on the opening roster, and I don't think that he should be, but I think that was a chance just by how polished he already looks. And then it's cool to see J-Rod, but he obviously looks a lot less polished than Kelnick does at this point. But I think that's my that was kind of a long answer again, but I think that's probably it.
No, you're good, man. You're a pro. Fill in the time wonderfully. This is great. In the time of Rona, we need as much long-winded thoughts as we can get. You know, we're trying to distract people from everything else. So
I know, man.
This is no time for short and complete thoughts. We need to... Long-form content will thrive during the age of Rona. That's my theory here. Okay, so I want to end with this then, Mikey. I've been doing this all off-season, talking to people about why and how they became Mariners fans in the first place. And I know for a lot of people, and it sounds like you are in this club as well, a huge part of it is just geography, like being born here. And especially if you're born in the late 90s, like, the Mariners are very good. They're fun to watch, all that. Like, they were the it team. But then over the years, I don't know if you knew this, they've been actually really, really bad, as it turns out. So for a lot of people, this was kind of the time to check out. And you obviously went the other way, as, you know, everyone involved in Lookout Landing has. We sort of doubled down and decided the Mariners, even when they're at their shittiest, are going to be our thing. But I want to know all the mechanics of that. How did it happen? When did you become aware of the Seattle Mariners? And then when did the jump happen where you became really, really invested to the point of staying in the car when Mike Leake has a perfect game?
So I don't know, like, what... like, why it was the Mariners, because I remember having really fond memories of, like, watching, I have a super clear memory. Well, obviously it's not super clear because I don't remember who the second player was, but I remember, I think, an alley-oop, like, from half court, from, like, maybe Ruben Patterson to Desmond Mason. And I remember being so young that I was, like, my dad was watching and I was, like, dunking in one of those things that, like, babies spin in, and there's toys on the perimeter, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. So I was so small that it was, like, reasonable to be doing that, and, like, high enough where, like, it was a thing. But I remember doing that, and around the same time, you know, growing up watching the Seahawks, and, like, this is, like, pre-Matt Hasselbeck, so, like, a while ago. But, like, definitely... my fondest memories were the Mariners, and maybe this is because they played the most often, and I honestly, one of my favorite childhood memories is, and it's not even really a memory because it's so many different nights, but my dad is one of the hardest working people I've ever met in my life. In high school, I remember he would, like, go to work with walking pneumonia and the flu, like, both. And he has, like, a blue collar job. Like, he's a welder. And he would get home after, like, a hard day's work, you know, like 10, 12 hours. and it was just such a routine. Like, he would sit on the couch and I would take his boots off and we would just like lay together, and I'd like sit on his lap, or, you know, we'd like lay down, and we'd watch the Mariners, and he'd scratch my back, and he would always like fall asleep watching the Mariners, and I would always like subtly, you know, like shift, so he would like wake up and start scratching my back again. Yeah, but I honestly, like, it is my favorite memory of like my life. And it's, I honestly like am not, exaggerating at all. It's just like that, like, I already loved baseball, but to be able to like kind of have that, that like bonding time and relationship with my dad, was super cool. So yeah, like that's kind of when it started. I remember going to like neighbors' bonfires, and them being like, "Hey, Mikey, like, what's Ichiro's batting average?" And I'd be like, "Oh, it's 342." And they'd be like, "What's Brett Boone RBI total?" And I'd be like, "Oh, he has 79 right now." Because I would just so obsessively watch the Mariners and just like memorize their stat lines and go on like foxsports.com and go to the like Mariners site and just refresh the page waiting for news to come. And then just like going in the backyard and like it'd be a sunny summer day, and just like there'd be a shadow and I would like go and watch a game against the Yankees or the Giants or something, and I would practice like different hitters' stances, and like see how it looked relative to like the TV and the shadow. So I just like have such fond memories of watching the Mariners and going to games with my dad. Like, I still remember like a walk-off game, like Tom Lampkin hitting a walk-off single up the middle against, I don't know who, but I remember being there with my dad.
I think it was against the Giants, like a chopper up the middle over the pitcher. Yeah, yeah. I think someone scores from second. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I was at that game. So I guess, yeah, it was an important game, so that's partially why I remember. But yeah, I just remember like going to games and like getting Ichiro posters with my dad and like raising my poster over my head and knocking over people's beers, and my dad would like have to pay for them. And just like people knew that I loved the Mariners. Like my aunt would always buy me Ichiro shirts, and it was always embarrassing. Like, my family would be like, "Hey, Mikey, do the thing." And someone would get me like a spatula, and I would do the Ichiro, like the whole routine with the like sleeve tug and everything, like in front of 30 family members. So yeah, like after that, it was just like, I was just always a Mariners fan. It wasn't until like high school that I started to like kind of like football more. And I think I started to get a little fatigued with the Mariners maybe. But then I think in 10th grade, I had an ASL class, an American Sign Language class, with my friend Dustin. And he'd always be like, "Hey, man, like, did you read that Dave Cameron article?" I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I did." And I definitely didn't. And he'd be like, "Did you read that Jeff Sullivan article on Lookout Landing?" And I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, totally, dude. That was, let's talk about it." But I never did. And eventually he just hounded me enough to where I was like, "Okay, man, like, I'll read these articles." And it kind of rekindled my love for the Mariners. Like, I have so many inside jokes and so many random memories of like Jeff Sullivan recaps, and that's really where the analytical side got started. Like, that's when I started reading like Fangraphs and USS Mariner and Lookout Landing. And so really ever since 2010, I've been wanting to write for Lookout Landing. So yeah, I don't know, like, I went through a phase recently where I was getting pretty close to just, like, especially if we would have started with a new regime, I would have been like, "Okay, I'm just going to root for a new team." And if I did, it would probably be the A's or the Rays or something. So I kind of have, like, second team, sort of, that I, like, sure. passively root for.
Yeah.
But I think that's just, like, to make myself feel like I'm in control. Because I don't think I could ever give up on the Mariners.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, though. Like, I don't have teams that I, like, root for or follow in the same way. But I would say 3 or 4 years ago, I just became so fascinated by the Mets. Like, everything the Mets do is so funny yeah. to me. And, like, it's so hard to turn away. It was really that year they made the World Series that I was like, these guys are idiots. Like, they're not great. Like, you know, they had some good players on that team, but it was still, like, it had a very 04 Red Sox kind of vibe. And then right. also just, like, the history of the Mets is always, like, they're the little brother to the Yankees. Like, mm-hmm. their best team ever, the one that wins the World Series, only wins it because of the most famous heir ever. And then you find out later, like, all those guys were doing cocaine, like, on the field. So, like, that just all became, like, very interesting to me. And then I think Mets. From a personal standpoint, they have, I think, the best broadcast booth in the entire league. So, like, just watching a Mets game is so much fun with those guys. Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling are both on that 86 Mets team, too. So you get mm-hmm. both stories of that team, but also, like, the insight into the game that, like, no disrespect, that Mike Blowers doesn't really give you just because he's such a different kind of baseball player. You know, right, Mike Blowers is like the, you know, put your head down, you play baseball, you know, you work hard, you love the game, all that. And Keith Hernandez is just the complete opposite of that.
Right.
So I don't know, I really get into the Mets, and like just watching them is like my little reprieve, especially because a lot of times I'm not playing at the same time as the Mariners. So you can do both. Like you can, for me, it'd be like I'd come home sometimes, and if the Mets had started at 4, it catch the end of that, and then you watch however much of the Mariners you want before falling asleep, and it's like a nice right. balance. But I totally agree with you. Like, there's no chance at any point in my life that I stop caring about the Mariners completely. Like, it would have right. to be just an absolute catastrophe for that to happen. Like, everyone involved in the organization goes to prison or something for, like, a heinous crime.
Other than those, like, it was close with the I forgot her name. The, you know.
Lorena Martin.
Lorena Martin stuff. I was like, come on, guys. Like,
yeah.
It was so bad.
I mean, yeah, that certainly wasn't ideal. And, like, that was the first time I think I had to actually take stock of what I was doing here. Because at the mm-hmm. end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. Obviously, I think every sports fan knows that. Like, if you walk right. away, it doesn't affect the Mariners whatsoever. Unless you're, like, giving them a shit ton of money. But right. even if you're doing that, like, their bottom line won't be affected at all. So.
No.
Yeah. When did it start to sink in for you, if it even has, that we have no idea when we're going to see sports again?
Oh, man. It was pretty exponential. Probably sometime, like, in the middle of last week. I would say somewhere around, like, Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
That sounds about right, but it's been such a blur.
I think Wednesday was the last day, because I was actually, I was watching the Jazz Thunder game. That was like my whole plan for that night, because I'm an insane person. Like, I'm totally that guy where, like, I'll be on the ESPN app and, like, see what games are going on. And then if I see one I want to watch, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm doing tonight. If anyone texts me, I'm like, hey, I'm watching Jazz Thunder. Do you want to come over? But, like, I'm not leaving. Right. And then the game, like, never happened, and I was like, what's going on? And just started poking around on Twitter, and you find out that, oh, Rudy Gobert might have the coronavirus.
Oh, dude.
And I feel bad for laughing, but just the circumstances around it were pretty objectively funny.
Right.
And I think once I realized what that actually means, like, oh, a player in the league might have it, then it's like, okay, obviously they have to shut down. Like, they can't even do the empty arenas, because they're all touching the same ball and being in the same locker room. So that's when it started to, like, creep in, like, oh shit, they might have to, like, take a month off. That's what I thought. And then more and more news comes out, and also I start to understand how a virus works. And it's like, well, I think that was the day after all that happened, when I woke up and kind of compared the two, like, A, what happened in sports, and B, what happened in science. I was like, I think we're fucked here, guys. Like, I'm gonna have to develop some other kind of personality, or, like, find things to do to occupy myself, which is kind of daunting, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, yeah, it's like really all we can do is analyze, like, stuff that happened in the spring and last year, so.
Yeah.
Not super ideal.
It's going to be weird. Spare a thought for your local content creators, everyone.
For sure.
In this dark time. All right, Mikey, let's get out of here then. Before we go, talk about yourself. Where can the people find you on the internet? What do you want to direct them to? Floor is yours for shameless plugs.
Dope. You can find me on Twitter at Mikey Ajetto PL, and my last name, I guess I should say my first name too, because people always spell it Mickey, but it's MikeyAjetto and then PL, and the PL is because I also write at PitcherList. I'm planning on dropping that from my my Twitter handle at some point, but I need something that I can use. So you can find my work on Lookout Landing now, which is incredible. You can find me over at PitcherList, and then you can find me on Twitter there. I also have my own competing Mariners podcast. It was previously called Griffey's Naptime Podcast with one of my buddies, Dustin, actually, that basically got me into all this. But now I think it's pretty aptly named It's Never Sunny in Seattle. And you can find that on SoundCloud and Spotify and I believe iTunes. I think that's really it. I can't really think of anything else, but you can find me there and you can we can talk about some Mariners.
Cool, very cool. Love to entertain on all platforms. You know, that's what we're here for. Right. To just open the door for everyone else to get in here as well. I'm Matthew Robertson. You probably knew that. You can ask about me. I'm out here. Follow me on Twitter at mroberson22. Read Lookout Landing. We don't know what the site is going to look like, but it's going to be fun. We'll have some nonsense. We'll have some baseball. We have our minor league podcast that's within this same feed. So if you're listening to this, just press back and you'll see some minor league stuff eventually. Stick with us, guys. We know this is, like I said, one of the weirdest times I can ever remember being alive for, but the beauty of the internet is that we can all do it together and band together around the Mariners or lack thereof. So let us know on the comments of this post or on Twitter what you want to see. We're totally willing to crowdsource content while there's no actual baseball. Mikey, any final thoughts, any science tips, any hand-washing techniques you want to share?
I definitely think, like, just stay inside. Don't be dumb. Like, if you don't have to go inside or outside, don't do it. Wash your hands for 20 seconds and use hand sanitizer that has 60% or more alcohol. I feel like we should all know this, but just stop touching people. Stop touching your face.
Perfect. All right, you heard it here first, folks. We've saved America. And I'll be back next week to do the same thing with a different guest. Bye. My soul.